by the community. Good morning, everybody. It's time once again for the Men's Mental Health Show. Brad Spillane here. Got a good show in store, but just before we get going, I want to say a special thanks to Kai Ora, Manuka Honey, and Glenn Watson, who's been very generous in giving us some Manuka Honey. We should actually give one away each week to a listener if you want to text me at some stage on 0404 077 666. And we might give the first text away to someone for a small jar of Manuka. A sponsor, and also to AMP, all manufacturing personnel, recruitment and labour high in the manufacturing industry. If you're looking for staffing solutions, look up allmanufacturing.com.au, ask for Craig. And also to the Mounties Group, of course, who have been long-time sponsors of the show. Massive show last week, of course, in remembrance of the late Bodie Marsden. Quite overwhelming, to say the least. Sentiments and calls locally, nationally and abroad. I think even my father was listening in with a couple of his in-laws over in New Zealand whilst he's visiting family. And yeah, massive. And a beautiful message this morning from Bodie's daughter, Anya, as well. I spoke to all the kids, Anya, Kate, well, not Kate and Dan. I'm looking forward to meeting them next week. Josh and, of course, Elsha. It's been a very difficult time. But, you know, I think they've realised, particularly from the support and the feedback that they've had over the past week, and also too, they've thanked us gratefully here at the Men's Mental Health Show for putting on such a wonderful nod and send-off. So thank you for that. But yeah, I think it's helped them really process the whole passing of Bodie and made them, I guess, realise or see. I mean, they always thought their dad was a wonderful bloke, but to see some of the things and places he's reached.
Yeah, he's been deeply appreciated, hasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, and we're yet to have his formal funeral and wake and the like. That'll happen shortly. But it's good to know that he was well-loved for his friends and family.
Yeah.
And no doubt those sentiments will continue and his legacy will continue.
Yeah, good morning, Christian.
Yeah, sorry. Good morning.
And good morning. I'm doing all right after 5 years, eh?
Yeah.
And good morning to you, Johnny. Of course, you make the trek every, you know, a couple of times a month and maybe more from Newport. So, mate, thanks. And thanks for catching up and giving me support, both of you blokes, for checking in on me from time to time, because, you know, it was a real leveler, real grounding for me to be able to talk. Because a lot of the time I'm not even thinking about where I'm at or what's going on. And both of you blokes have helped keep me, I guess, level in that sense of, and then remember.
Yeah, it's hard to stay level when your foundation's been knocked out from underneath you, right?
And a massive one at that.
Yeah.
So yeah, thanks, Bill. It's a privilege to be here, and congratulations both of you on you know, I listened in, of course, I streamed it live, which was powerful. And you know, I mentioned earlier, and I'll say again, a safe, aware, honest, heart based space that you guys created, shared amongst you, invited all of us out there listening to join. It was such a powerful experience. And for me, so like having not a huge time with Bodie, but like a really intense time, right? I think there are certain souls in the world that are created as lodestones. And I think, you know, because they are born, they have a propensity, and then they're given experiences and opportunities in life to grow into that.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I walked in and I knew Bodie was a lodestone, right? Yeah, he was someone who had wisdom just by being in his circle of influence. I was going to grow. And not only that, he was just a cool guy to watch and to talk to and to share with. So,
you know, like I said last week, I never looked at Bodie as being 74, you know, because he was just so young at heart.
He was vital. Like, he had vitality.
And so much love, so much fun. You know, I had a chat to Muz after the show, and I'll share it with the listeners because, you know, I'm not sure if I said it last week, but I said to Muzzy, hey, man, you know, because it was tough at the beginning and having you opposite me made it easier. And there was a time where we both, you know, broke down, I guess.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And I said, hey, man, I know this sounds really selfish, Muzz, but thanks, man. Thanks for losing it. What we would say is, not for a better word, but, you know, for blokes, because it really did help me. And right in that moment, you know, like, I've got my daughter up visiting at the moment, and I don't mean to sort of digress here, but you know, we were talking about some things, you know, I'm really building on this wonderful, fruitful, rich relationship with my daughter that I so many years I pined for.
Mm.
And she said to me when she was sharing something, and I kind of blamed myself for it, she said, "Dad, don't take this the wrong way, but it's not all about you." And I heard that just as I walked through the blue door here into the studio last week, and it really made me realise, well, hang on, well, it isn't.
Mm.
You know, this is, you know, about a celebration of a wonderful life of a wonderful man. And that, along with you being opposite me last week, was a really massive thing. So thanks, brother. Kudos.
That's all right. That's okay.
Yeah.
It was a good healing space, wasn't it, to, you know, celebrate him and that sort of thing. As you say, it's not all about me, but we can get caught up in our own personal stuff.
Well, I didn't mean to say it, not like it wasn't about even, you, but you know what I mean.
It's not even about Bodhi, actually,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Although he is the catalyst, right? Yes. And recognising his life is something that we are honour bound to do because of, you know, in a reciprocity, right?
Yeah.
He gave to us and we give to him,
yeah,
right? But he's gone, right? He's not hearing it, or maybe he is, so I hope he is, you know, depending on your belief system. But what you guys did as a consequence of that, so there was in the room, you know, a seasoned mental health, lived experience radio host, you know, a man who sees traumatic events every day and sees suffering and has a certain way of dealing with that, a certain stoicism.
Thank you.
And a man who had 50 years in war zones and military training.
Yes.
And a man who is dealing with holding together the dark side of the community, right, the chief. So, right, and he sees that and all three of you tapped in and shared that emotion, all four of you, all five, you know, and the blokes.
Jeff and Matt.
Jeff and Matt too.
Yeah.
And everyone.
And Robin. Sure.
And, you heard powerful...
Yeah.
Masculine, iconic roles. You heard the men in those who play those roles and who are those men. You heard them tear up.
Yeah, yeah.
You heard them share grief. You heard them be vulnerable. You heard them offer and honour someone.
Mm.
Man, like,
thanks,
that's
man.
That's a... I want to say that's effing gold, right? Yeah. But it's like it's gold, right? Yeah. And it's so... You say it's not about you, but that's a gift, a gift to the listeners and ultimately a gift to the community and the country and the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Not to, you know, not to get too crazy about it, but that will have ripples, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ultimately, that process is as much a gift to all of us as you know, all of Bodhi's good works.
Yeah. Thanks, John. And boy, you put some words together, man. That's really... Thank you.
Mate, I was listening. You guys were putting the words out there and the heart out there.
Well, we all had genuine relationships with Bodhi.
Yeah.
He was a very genuine person. And so it was... It's then easy to come together and be genuine.
You say that, but I don't believe it is, mate. Yeah, I think you're doing Premier League work as a bloke, right? You're playing playing a top-level game.
Mm.
And what's amazing about it was this place, you know, became a safe place to share that with the rest of us.
Yeah.
So I think Bodhi certainly demonstrated that, and as his example is leaching into us, that's why I value him as the lodestone. I knew him short time, but gained a lot of life benefit out of just that time. And I know you guys working with him have also been able to demonstrate that. So as a legacy, I think that was a walking, talking, radio-hosted legacy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He'd be really pleased, I reckon.
Yeah.
He would be. I think that was another crucial stepping stone or foundation for the processing for so many people. I know for a couple of his children was the fact that, you know, you talk about whether you believe in that thing or whatnot, and he questioned sometimes my beliefs in many things, but I just found if there was ever an enlightened man, Bodhi was it, you know, the comments that came back from palliative care and, you know, men's groups and other areas and, you know, former patients or clients that he helped over so many years who just came out of the woodwork to say, man, like, you know, I spoke to one bloke who's a local businessman. I shouldn't mention his name, but, you know, the first thing he said to me was it was a complete it was disbelief, of course, but was, oh, my God, you know, I wouldn't be the man I am today without the help that he gave me. And this guy's an extremely successful man, both with his family, with his mates, with his staff, and through life as a whole. And the power behind the words that came from this bloke, it was really helpful for that processing of, well, this is time to celebrate.
Yes.
And it's funny because, you know, talking closely with Annette, Bodie's wife, and our son Josh, and that next week on the 25th Thursday, of course, we're going to meet at Lura Gardens at 11 a.m. and then we're going to head off to Bodie's favourite spot, which is at the end of Queen Elizabeth Drive where Bodie and Annette live. And we're going to go to his favourite spot, and there's going to be the talking stick, you know, we pass that around. And he'd be swimming in that.
Yeah.
You know, like as much as all of us will be, and there's going to be some sad times, but it's going to be a time more than anything to celebrate once again who he was. And that he wouldn't want it any other way.
Mm.
You just have to look at some of those crazy pictures and when he's dancing and, you know, what a life, man. what a life, you know.
So you opened the show last week with a beautiful, heartfelt opening where you mentioned, you know, the question you'd been asking yourself,
yes.
You know, what would Bodie want?
Mm.
And you came up, the answer that you had was celebrate, right? I get that. But that really sparked in me a sort of review of how grief sits. You know, like it's a theme, you know, and so often when we're activated, our RAS system, the reticular activation system, kicks in and we start to see the question over and over again in life. It's the one bit we start to notice, right? So the last couple of weeks have been a grief theme. So I've been thinking on and celebrate. Right? And I think the core of that, for me, what came up was the core of it is gratitude.
Yeah.
And I tried to ask, and if I, you know, if I can grab a couple of minutes of your time, I tried to ask why. Mm. Why would we seek gratitude at that time? And I came back to the idea that grief is an appropriate response to the challenge of losing things, right? So Bodie was on holidays in Europe, right? And we were both here talking, wished him well and thought he was having fun, and we were happy with that, right? Mm. He wasn't here.
Yeah.
But we weren't sad.
No.
Right?
No, good point.
It's not the presence of that person.
Mm.
It's the loss.
The absence of.
Yeah, well, it's the loss of what we gain from being in his circle of influence.
Wow. Mm.
Yeah. So it's the loss of our future with him.
Yes. Yeah.
It's the loss of his confidence that he gives us. It's the loss of the love and heart that he shared with us, right? So we're grieving what happens to us, not where Bodie goes.
Yeah,
yeah. Right? Yeah.
So, like, I will miss Bodie, but I'm grieving the fact that I didn't spend more time learning from him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
yes.
What that does is, so how do I deal with that? The idea of what can I do with that grief? This is why celebrate is such a powerful concept, because at the core of celebration is you acknowledge you have gratitude for something.
Sure.
So I'm going to be grateful, which is a reframe of what I have for what I gained.
Mm.
Not what I will, what I'm projecting having lost in the future.
Mm.
So, what I really decided to do this week was to think about all the things I'm grateful for in the time I did share with Bodie, and to review some of those moments. Luckily, I happened to have them on Spotify to go over and listen to things.
We're all fortunate.
He's got 120 shows on there.
Yeah, he's, you know, his daughter. Sorry to interrupt, John. I love what you're saying here. It's so pertinent to the message I just received this morning, and it's, you know, this is from Anya, who's over in Germany, I believe, at the moment. I'm also so thankful to you, Bradley, and to the rest of the guys to have his wisdom and thoughtfulness recorded forever.
Yes.
So I can hear his voice when I need it.
Mm.
So thank you.
Yes.
You
know. Yeah, brilliant.
Gratitude.
It's gratitude,
yeah.
We're here today really to talk about grief. And both of you boys have had, you know, a lot of experience in grief, losing close and loved ones. The 12 months you've had, Muzzy, has been horrible.
Must have been a very, you know, challenging kind of familiar space.
It's been a bit of a roller coaster, I won't lie.
Yeah,
it has. And look, it's interesting what you're saying and applying that sort of that positive spin to this difficult situation and finding the gratitude. And it's really a fabulous remedy. I think, to feeling the loss.
Yeah.
At a physiological level, it's a little bit like coming down off a drug.
Yeah.
You know, when you feel love for someone
yeah.
and you lose that love, it's very similar to the same way as if you have a drug dependency yeah. and you go cold mm. turkey, because that's yeah. what's had to happen. We've all had to go cold turkey, so to speak, about yeah. Him suddenly being departed from our lives.
Yeah.
So there's the processes that are going through the brain are very, very similar. Mm. And you've got a sort of, you know, there's a in that initial period of complete being very uncomfortable and physically unwell and
motivated, distressed, not being motivated, stressed,
you know, and yeah. just out of sorts, like a, you know, like sort of, yeah.
Was there a just, sense of trying to run from that feeling again, or
not really? No, I don't think so. But not for me personally. But I, yes and no. It's you know, trying to find a clear path, a headway. You know, trying to find a way through and some direction in what is otherwise a sort of a chaotic and swirling waters of
yeah.
life.
Yeah,
I think it sort of feels a bit like that.
Yeah,
and trying to get some direction back.
So that chaos,
yeah.
You know, what was in the chaos for you? Because it did. Because after, you know, you've had a number of things lining up. That must, you know, like that's. Does it feel like piling on?
Yeah,
in chaos
a little bit, like a king tide.
Wow.
Yeah. You know,
with
yeah.
a storm yeah. surge on top of it.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. The perfect storm, you know, coming with three.
And,
yeah.
And
wow.
then the complete suck out when yeah, it's leaving right, us. You know,
like wow. that sort of thing. Yeah.
Great.
But at the same time. There's lots of positive things going on in my life as well.
Yeah.
And I prefer to dwell on those things where possible because they are some very positive things going on. And I'm very grateful.
So gratitude. So gratitude was like, so you, I'm sorry, if it's all right if I ask.
Yeah.
Yeah. The idea that you know, the sadness is there and the gratitude's there, not to overwhelm the sadness, but to like, to give you the resources to handle it?
Yeah, I think so. I think yeah. so. It, it, you know, even in the king tide and the yeah. storm surge, there can be a beautiful sunset.
Oh, absolutely,
you know, with
yeah.
the light sort of reflecting off the water beautifully. So I sort of a bit sort of poetic about that.
Yeah, yeah,
try
nice.
To be.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, look, and one of the things that I see in my job is that there's people living through lots of difficult stuff
yeah.
in their lives. And the lesson that I take away from that is to be grateful where I can be for the things that are positive and that I have, my friendships, my relationships, my health, that won't be there forever. And for the people I work with, my team, you know, they're important. They help me through this sort of stuff as well. Yeah. We all help each other.
Mm.
Here on the Men's Mental Health Show, you know, the friendships that we have together, the lessons that we learn, there's always, life is full of challenges. And that doesn't mean I have to just sort of, I don't know, I guess when the going gets tough, the tough get going. There's a little bit of that.
Well, it's interesting because, like, when I was first building up a concept of me as a coach, right? So the coaching thing, I came up with the 4 C's model, which was courage, clarity, you know, commitment, and connection. And then there were more C's out there, right? So I love the idea of, you know, okay, there's a sea of C's, right? So, you know, it's
curiosity, challenge.
Well, the superpower of curiosity, yeah. right? It drives, you know, where do you get your courage from, you know, if you don't have connection or if you don't have commitment or if you don't have a curiosity to go beyond your comfort zone,
and
right?
Yeah, challenge.
So, and personal challenge. And so I've now up to about 9 C's, right? So, and I just love that, bro, because like you go back to, you know, it's simple. For me now, it's almost like a process of, you know, I've got a situation, you know, like someone's rung up and said, this has happened.
Yeah. Right?
And so you can sit down and go, what C do I dive into and see, you know, and give, and, you know, we use words like resource and so on. I want to connect with people because it's really just about digging in and giving you something, you know, when you reach into a, you walk out into your shed or reach into your tool bag, right?
Yeah.
You have a bit of a look around and say, what's my problem and what am I going to, you know, use to help start working on that problem?
Yeah.
And really, that's all we do.
Yeah,
you know, particularly blokes, right? We want to. There's a problem. What do I know? What do I feel? Or who do I call to help me with that problem?
Yeah.
right? Simple about finding your toolkit.
Yeah.
And that's like last week was a toolkit for that for that shared grief and acknowledgement, because the problem wasn't just about us feeling sad. Mm. The problem was us knowing that as a fellow traveller and a leader of us, we needed to do have a certain ritual, a certain legacy, acknowledge a certain legacy.
Right.
So the problem solved together beautifully.
Mm. Mm.
Anyway, I don't know if that. I don't know what that meant.
It's probably one of the few things that I think, you know, all religions, or even atheists, I guess, but have that's at the forefront of all beliefs is gratitude, isn't it?
You know? Absolutely.
Like you look at when people are doing the 12-step program for addicts, you know, everything.
That's so true. Because
doctors, when they lose someone on the operating table, everything comes back to it.
And being grateful and being curious are the two ways to bring the tribe back in.
Mm. Yeah.
So when you know, like when we have that sadness, the way to treat a sadness is to acknowledge it, not to get rid of it, not to make it feel bad, not to throw the shame and not to exile it,
but
to hug it in,
and
say, no, you're part of us. This is
yes.
Your sadness is important to us.
Yes. Because, you know, the regrets of, you know, oh, one more thing. I had something so important to share and so many things to say.
So all of that, like, and I'm talking to, like, you know, like we're in a tribe. These are the inner dialogues, right? If we can actually, and you spoke about addiction, the process is really similar.
Yeah.
How do I, you know, like the things, as Buddhists say, the hindrances in solving some awareness, right? What are the hindrances in accepting the effectiveness, the effort that addiction part of us is doing? Because they are trying to help us. They've been given a role and saying, no, the addiction bit is you, because that's going to be used to quiet the pain or forget the trauma or, you know, to solve a problem where we were told we weren't this or we weren't that. So when you hug that addiction, when you give it and say, no, look, as a group, we've got all of that together. You can let go of that role. Mm. That part of you can let go of the need to suffer on our behalf.
Yeah. Do you think that in Western society we do loss, grief, well, because I know in many cultures it's very formalized.
Absolutely.
And there are structures in place that we would be following.
Yeah.
In, you know, yeah, the sorry sure. business, you know, which would be, there would be rituals, there would be time periods that are allocated for grieving.
Well, it's like a lot of things.
There would be support structures, and like there would be
like
a structure
parenting,
around.
Isn't it?
Yeah, there'd be a structure around all this stuff. I don't think we do grieving very well, like loss in Western society very well.
Just because thought of that.
We don't really have a clear way to cope with this. Sure, we have funeral, we have a wake. But beyond that, there's not really much there
if you were to ask people what the purpose of a wake is, right? What the purpose of a funeral is, they wouldn't have a clear answer. Like, you know, that the idea of sorry business is such a powerful concept. So many cultures, you're right, you're spot on.
Point,
so many cultures have rituals and that serves a very real purpose to give us a framework to hold on to, so that we maximize this idea that people can come in and build a place that is safe to express those tough bits, right, and have support and relevance and normalization. So you like created a safe space last week.
Yeah.
It was like a ritual.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and you know, Spillo, you invited everyone to join in that ritual. Oh, we've got, you know, the song, the music, the conversations.
Yes, that's right.
Everyone played a part, shared the thing, handing the stick around. Mm. All of that, we created a ritual to do that. And the outcome was a genuine release.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And not just for the people participating, but for the people listening, there was a genuine capacity to connect.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. Now that, you are so correct. most funeral rites and rituals now in a modern Western society like Australia have lost meaning.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, you've got to fit it into a one-hour time slot.
Yeah, yeah. That's
We're going to have a few eulogies. We're going to have a slideshow. We're going to... And then, time to get out.
Yes. I got told by my the minister at my father's funeral that I had 5 minutes to do the eulogy.
Yeah, wow. Not much. That's
I looked at him
and
I said, "Mum, you...
You sort this out.
You're going to lose your spot at church because this ain't going 5 minutes." Right? I had a lot to say.
Yes.
Right? What I was saying was I'm going to announce Dad's transition to the world.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it was about this idea of saying, hey, there were... You know, the truth is the pathway to his next level, wherever that is, whatever my belief is, right? This is about me. Mm. You know, I feel like that's a part of that process, of that ritual, of the necessary elements of seeing someone go past and beyond and onto the next, whatever it is your belief systems are. So I felt that need to honour his truth by sharing my understanding of his truth and what it meant to me.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I see that every time in these funerals that people don't even talk at anymore.
No.
Mm. I'm going, man, the legacy of that is this, those people are going to walk away with unresolved grief.
Yes.
Mm.
With unexplored relationships, with full stops not being applied, with sentences not being finished and paragraphs not being completed.
Mm.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going, we've got it wrong. We should actually sit down and say this is an absolutely free zone, because there's things to be said, and good, bad, or indifferent. As long as it's true, and as long as it feels, comes from a feeling place, then it's right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I was at my father's funeral. I had the privilege of being able to give a eulogy. And so I got to say my piece.
Yeah.
And we were very fortunate in that we weren't at a funeral home or a chapel. We were at the community hall. And so the community came together.
Wow.
And it was a big space. It was limitless time.
Yeah.
I think it went for about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours.
Wow.
You know, at the ceremony. By the time we had had multiple eulogies and song and we had a fantastic slideshow that my wife put together, and that was fantastic, which was his artwork as well as
that's beautiful.
You know, portraits of him through the years.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if we'd had the Where For Our, we would have, everyone could have got up and had a chat.
Yeah,
it would have gone all day.
Yeah, you know?
And as it turns out, that was kind of what ended up happening at the wake. Yeah. The wake, which was a party at his house, which we'd turned from a studio space into a gallery space by cleaning it up and that sort of thing. A jazz band formed.
Yeah.
You know, out of the mourners.
Wow.
And we suddenly had live jazz with
it was like about an
eight-piece sort of impromptu jazz band.
An orchestra.
Yeah, like an orchestra. And he loved his jazz.
Yeah.
We did a funerary march around the house, like a New Orleans kind of thing. And Cameron Robbins, who's an accomplished artist himself, there was a bit of an intro, and then everyone gathered. There was sort of, he played the clarinet, and then it paused, and he said, "Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. If the akavit doesn't get you, the art must."
Yeah.
And the akavit being the Danish schnapps.
Yeah.
So
So,
but then it sort of turned into something much more buoyant and so on. But it was a good get together. And that get together went all week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Family and friends staying over. I highly recommend it when somebody passes, if you've got a space to be able to do that. To get everyone together. And I think, hopefully that will... This is what we're here doing with Bodhi.
Absolutely,
We're taking our time with it.
Yeah.
You know, here we are, beginning the process.
And the purpose of this, like a funeral and the rites and even that kind of celebration, I believe, is not to mourn.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's not to not mourn.
No.
Yeah. It's to bring a whole bunch of true emotions and allow them space to be felt.
Yeah, true emotions. Good.
True. Sadness is absolutely appropriate. Grief, right? They all have a role to play.
Yeah, yeah.
They're telling us important things internally, and then gratitude. even envy and anger. Yeah. If you can feel anger for the things and express that, isn't that like bringing together the inner tribe and saying, no, we're all here.
Yeah.
No one's hiding. No one's leaving any legacy of weight or carry or hiding.
Yeah.
Right? We're expressing this, and this is what we do. This ritual's coming together, and when this is done, we've done it right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it
at
makes
all.
Sense to me. No. Yeah, well, there was joy too. You know, there was joy. There was a lot of joy.
Yeah, of course. You can't look at an artwork where he expressed himself joyfully without, like, it's not appropriate to say, oh, isn't that miserable? You know, like, it's appropriate to see, acknowledge, and even feel that joy. I think that's part of that true emotion, right?
Yeah, true.
We're just going to duck off to a quick, short few messages. I didn't play any last week, and it was really kind of management here, but without these messages, we can't keep going. So I'm sorry to interrupt, boys, but it's a men's mental health show. We're here with Christian Mortensen, John Millam, and Brad Spillane, and we look forward to your company in just a moment.
Every Tuesday morning from 11 a.m. on Radio Blue Mountains, Brad Spillane holds a thought-provoking look at mental health issues for men living in the Blue Mountains. Regular guests on the show are Bodie Marson, a Wentworth Falls psychotherapist, Blue Phillips, a retired Army general, and Gary Sims, an RUOK ambassador. Spillo attempts to help men understand their thoughts and emotions and to recognise that being vulnerable is not a sign of weakness, but rather a sign of courage, strength and bravery. The Men's Health Show is a must-listen for everyone in the Blue Mountains community, and it's here every Tuesday morning on Radio Blue Mountains 89.1 FM from 11 a.m.
And welcome back to the Men's Mental Health Show. We're here with John Millam, Christian Mortensen, and Spillo, Brad Spillane, here as your host. And, it's a terrific start of the show. We're really jumping into our grief today, but we're mixing in that with a bit of gratitude and just before we cut to the break, joy.
Yeah.
Why joy? What's the importance behind the joy that we can mix this in with?
I'd love to have a go at that first up. But is it all right if I start with a kind of tangential story, right?
Okay.
The idea... So just recently I had COVID, right, in December. And, previous to that I'd been sick with sepsis. So I was pretty chronic, right? So the last few years I have been to the edge of life, right? And that left me with a legacy of anxiety around certain elements of, like, and perhaps a worry that I actually had lost my vitality, like the capacity to heal. So I'm getting better and I'm learning that back, right? But what was interesting is part of that fear was like something like a flu or vax. I didn't go for the extra, boosters and so on, simply because underlying that was an unacknowledged fear of... perhaps not being good enough to handle it. I couldn't heal. Getting COVID, it triggered that fear. So I'm sitting at home, I'm feeling awful. My temperature's going up. I was 38 and a half.
Ooh.
And I'm going, clearly in the middle of it. I'd tested negative up to a point, and then the positive test came and I just went, right? And it was interesting because at that point... just sitting in this sickness, right? And feeling that chaos starting, the clouds of chaos and anxiety coming over me, right? And having been there before in some dark places on my journey, everything seemed to be, oh, this again, oh, no.
Life can feel a bit tenuous, hey?
Very. I'm losing that link to that vitality that, gives you a sense of control about where it's going on. Now, interestingly, at that point, the memory of the work I put in, both internally and externally, so the physical acknowledgement of my and understanding of healing that I've learned, that I put the work in to get to a healing space, and all of the inner work that I've done to be, to learn, to understand, to manage, to lead my inner tribe, right? it just kicked in. Right? So I'm sitting here, my fever's steadily rising, and suddenly, personally, I had this sense of joy at a challenge that was in front of me, right? A sense of gratitude, joy. It can only be described as joy. I'm sitting here and I decided, no, I'm not going to fear the fever.
Yeah.
I'm going to fire the fever.
Mm.
So I sat there and kind of mentally stoked it. It's like I was mentally blowing the bellows, right, to ramp it up. Fire cauterizes. The whole point of fever is a consequence of a really active, energetic immune system.
Exactly.
So I'm giving the mental bellows, right, going, all right, you want fever? Let's go up there. So I got to 39.5, which is a pretty reasonable fever. Feeling outwardly miserable. Inwardly, I felt like a warrior, right? I was fired up. I was smiling and feeling miserable.
He's not a normal man.
And I just knew that whatever, like, it ceased. All the consequences, the darkness of those clouds, the thinking, the parts of me that launched into that worry and that protective kind of anxiety and overwhelm, right? That I had that protected me from you know, so many things in the past. They just sat back and allowed my inner confident ones, my inner warriors, my inner protectors to come forward and take care of things.
Right.
And it was about trust in who I was, both inside and out, and that was joyful.
Yeah, that's a brilliant response. I've got to say, that's a brilliant response. And the thing is about things like COVID, and for many people, it's the only time that they've had a little reminder that
about mortality,
which is what we're talking about today, and that all life comes to an end, and sometimes it comes through sickness, and sometimes it comes very suddenly through an accident and the like. But COVID was very much a reminder for a lot of people that this is the case. And not everyone got through it, I saw a lot of really sick people during COVID in the first waves, and went to a few people who passed away as a result of it.
Wow.
But on the whole, most people, it was mild, which was thank God fortunate. For that, which was very fortunate. Thank God it's not something like Ebola.
Oh my God!
Imagine if Ebola had the same mechanism. How
would you find joy in Ebola?
No,
John?
God, no. There would be.
But he would.
Yeah, it would be.
Well, the circumstance you're in means you need to find the gratitude for your life lived, not the life ended. Yeah. Ending is a. You know, I fall back to Gandalf, right? Where he talks to Mary, I think at the time, and just says, "Oh, you got it wrong. This isn't the end."
No.
Yeah,
Ebola is a transition form.
Well, Ebola is just one of tens of thousands of things that can happen to us. But that's just we'll just have to accept them.
Absolutely.
And look, we don't need to throw a veil of darkness over our lives because of the possibility of many things. But we should be celebrating.
And nipping the bellows.
You know, and look, the fact that you've even, you know, got to that point where you're thinking those things and you're going to stoke those fires probably means you're not that unwell to start, which is great.
I felt really crooked, but obviously...
Yeah.
You know, we're blokes. We feel far worse than women.
Well, we can blow up on them.
Yeah, yeah.
And to be fair, listeners, these are two seasoned men with... that no grief and destitute. So continue, boys.
Look, you can inflate things in your mind, right? And it can be an asset or it can be a handicap, what we put together in our minds.
The conclusion was the fever broke the next day.
Yes.
And 3 days later I tested negative.
Yes.
Wow. Right.
So it wasn't the worst COVID.
Look, I've had people call me because they've eaten ham that had a odd smell. Right, I call that job Hamageddon. Right?
John, why do they eat it if it's got a bad smell? Don't
I'm
you smell it before you eat
sure.
it?
I couldn't
if
quite
you
work
cook
that
it
out.
Long enough,
yeah.
the smell goes away.
I said, you're okay in a Hamageddon out of here. Yeah. So look, you can inflate things in your mind, and then again,
if you can make a bad joke about it.
You can make a bad joke about it, but we can also disregard things that are important. Mm. You know, for example, and I'm going to say this again: if you've got chest pain,
okay, and
you think, "Wow, I've got some really weird, odd sensations in my chest," it's probably just indigestion. Well, until you've really had that investigated, we don't really know. And if you've taken your indigestion medication and the discomfort is not going away, that's when it's time to call Triple O.
Or okay? if you're always meant to have an aspirin on hand.
You can have an aspirin on hand.
And if the aspirin works and gives you relief, then it's probably a good indication that there is also...
No, the aspirin won't do anything for a cardiac condition. The aspirin is there to stop blood platelets from sticking together. So it's not really going to resolve chest pain, but it will prevent you from progressing.
Right. Okay.
It's not going to stop.
It's a prophylactic.
What it does is it basically inhibits blood platelet aggregation.
It's another word I'm going to look up after this.
What happens is, and look, I've had friends who have called me in the middle of the night saying, I've got a really weird feeling in my chest and I don't feel right, or I've got some neck discomfort or jaw pain and I'm feeling a bit sick. And I'm like, call an ambulance straight away. And literally that phone call has saved their life.
Yeah. Wow.
It has saved their life.
Yeah.
And because they were having a cardiac event where the blood supply. Now, that is something that we shouldn't ignore.
Ignoring, like, none of this is ignoring, right? So when we feel joy, we're not ignoring, we're acknowledging.
Mm.
When we feel sadness, right, ignoring sadness is not good. Acknowledging it and understanding that it's part of many resources that we have is good. Mm. I think that inner awareness is our journey, right? So they call it, you know, it's called EQ, it's called emotional flexibility, it's called, you know, inner awareness, like, you know, whether we meditate our way there or take psychedelics to achieve it, you know, there's a million pathways to some of this awareness.
Mm.
The problem when you talked about grief, it's almost like Western society, Australian society, has set up to ignore even reflecting on it.
Yes, that's right.
Right? So it's not like we're saying we don't want to even open the door on that inner awareness.
Mm.
Whatever has happened is bad.
Yeah.
And I don't want to approach it. And I think that's bad. Bad things, when we approach them, we give them a sense of perspective and we find the gratitude, the gold in the pile of crap that we then will take as a legacy. So if we're grieving someone's loss, if you don't reflect on their life, you don't find their meaning that they are gifting us forward. So instead of the grief of our loss of what we now no longer have, we acknowledge and take away the gift of what they gave us in the first place.
Wow.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it makes sense.
It makes complete sense. I'm going through so many thoughts.
It helps swallow the bitter pill, isn't it? It's the spoonful
of honey. Well, that's what I was just thinking.
It helps the medicine
go. The spoonful of manuka, honey.
That's helping with the process for me,
So... another tangential story around that. I promise I'll come back to that exact point is I do a men's group and a recent one in town in Paddington, right, which is face-to-face. Group of men, really cool guys, right? Just diverse group, you know, diverse ages, diverse backgrounds. In there, and of course no names, but in there it was revealed one of the men sharing got to the point where he revealed his... terminal diagnosis, right, with cancer. And the initial thought, right, is, of course, there's the sucking in of breath, there's the men in the group, right? He's sitting there and he's real and, oh, my goodness, did he just say that?
Yeah.
Right, and that's that typical Western response almost. We all suck in our breath and go, there are certain people who have to sign up for funerals and things, but everyone else is... Oh, we'll say the ritual things like, oh, I'm sorry for your loss, here's some flowers and some money or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. For me, I wanted to do something different and the thing that I reached for was curiosity and permission. So I asked him if I could ask a question.
Yeah.
Because how often do you get to talk to a man who is facing those kind of things in his life and who has acknowledged it to another group of men. It was gold, and I asked him, and the question that came to mind that I personally was really, really interested in was, are you scared?
Yeah.
Well, that's something that you ask yourself all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, so, that's right.
That's something that I noticed from all the blokes at the men's table, you know, including Bodhi, was, you know, it's coming. And the fact of having to face it, how are we going to go about this?
And his answer, and then the opening that that invited into the group, was amazing, right? And like he was, you know, he was, you know, dealing with it really good. Well, but it was, there was a moment of reflection where he then changed course, and he said, honest, and said, "Oh, look, to be honest, I'm not sure how I feel about the potential for pain." And so, you know, some of those, and that realness, just my goodness, that's such a transformation. And what I felt I gained out of that was I gained this normalization of me thinking about my own death. Now, I've probably done that more than most blokes in recent times, but I was so grateful for his honesty, which allowed me to find an honest place in me.
Yeah.
How would I feel about that? You know, what's actually, you know, what do I feel about my impending demise? Because we're all impending, some, you know, and, you know, some short, some long, right? And how would I feel about the you know, signing up to, you know, to going into that knowledge?
Yeah.
How would, what courage would I have to find? What, how would I connect to others? How would I share that news? Right? Those questions, I think I gained a lot from. And it was his generosity and his courage and his connection that initiated that. I'm so grateful for that. And that's maybe a little bit of that process.
Do you think he took something away, being able to share that with the group? And, and sort of, because he's become sort of a, I mean, he's going obviously through a very difficult journey.
He is.
And
wow, man.
You want to derive some benefit from being able to do that, you know, be able to give back to others, just to say, look, this is how I'm dealing with it. And
so there's the gift of giving. So his honesty and sharing, right, that gave to us, and I think that gives, you know, when you give, you gain.
Yes,
right.
Well,
but even more than that, the physical acknowledgement and affirmation that he gained. Like, no one is miserable about getting, you know, being told that they're a great bloke. Right? It's like women and shoes. How many times, you know, can you tell a woman her shoes look great before it wears off?
Wow, yeah.
I don't think there's a number you can put on that.
I think it's infinite.
Well, I think John goes close. Sorry, mate. It's a pot calling the kettle black here, because you hate a compliment. I'm sorry.
I do. I have to
work
on it.
Sometimes I'll give you a compliment and you'll divert. And
I'm still not very good at it, am I?
You and I are very similar to that. It's like, hey, man, like, you know.
Goes back to what, you know,
but if I'm present or in the moment, like at the beginning of the show, you gave me a wonderful compliment. I sat there and absorbed it, you know, like,
well done.
Thank you. Yeah.
Wow.
But you know what I mean? No, but
I do. It took me 3 years of intentional work
to work on that.
I kept it very small. So I was eating a very small spoonful of elephant, and it was, I tended, when people would say something nice, I would reply with, "I was nothing," or would say, "Look, anyone would have done it."
I would
dismiss, and I called it spoiling their Christmas.
Yes,
stealing their Christmas,
their gift.
That sense of like, if someone gives you something, and you turn it down, what's that like?
What's that? Well, that's what's that like for them? Absolutely.
Yeah. I sort of reframed it as service.
I'm serving them
by accepting a compliment.
Yes.
Plus, if when you start to do that, gosh,
that's a great way of looking at it. Man.
When I start to do that, I started allowing them in.
Yeah.
They started healing me.
Yeah. Wow.
So
powerful, hey.
So people's gifts.
Yeah.
Became powerful and. Yeah. I got a sense of accomplishment, but also they started healing my worth.
Yeah, yeah.
right? And the strange thing about acknowledging that I found was, you know, you are desperate for it when you don't have it.
Yes.
So you're constantly attention seeking.
Well, you know,
you're constantly inviting people. You would invite people to compliment you and then you would turn them down and say, I can't accept that compliment. Yeah. Go away. No, don't go too far because I want you to do it again.
Yeah.
We're going to keep trying, right? And I'm still going to not process this.
Yeah.
And then when I started learning, and it took me, I would reckon, 3 years of intentional work before I could say, that's really nice of you.
Yes.
Instead of, oh, that's nothing, you know. So when I started inviting, it started healing. And then I started not to need it.
Yeah.
Right? So when people, it became a genuine surprise and a genuine joy because I no longer sought it.
Yeah.
Because their healing had had its effect on me.
Yeah.
It had rebuilt my own worth and I was intrinsically happy, not desperate for some external source of happiness.
But it's for guys like you and I that struggle with compliments, and but at Getty Better, it's almost, I don't know if I'm speaking for behalf of you, but for me it's almost I've got to, you know, say something about that. Like say, appreciate it, you know, acknowledge that token of, of gift that you've given me to compliment. When I look at someone like this bloke, right, Christian, because he being a first responder,
he just expects to be complimented.
He's getting compliments all day, every day, right, for many, many things.
And I rarely give them.
Only when, if
only
you get one,
if you really deserve one.
But he's got this, like, if you give Muzzy a compliment, his body language says thank you, as opposed to his words, you know what I mean? Like, you see the impact almost immediately. It's like it lifts him up. You can see it's like, you know, it's like a John Howard behind the lectern, you know. He jumps up. And that's what a wonderful acknowledgement and skill to be able to do it like that.
Yeah.
I've never really had a difficulty with receiving compliments as far as I know. But
well, that inner confidence, right?
And wonderful,
when you're receiving it and it lights up, right? And, you know, because you're then gifting your body, your energy out.
Yeah.
You know, so I think...
Look, I do give compliments and, you know, I do I do enjoy giving compliments
to
people.
I've heard one today.
I've been the receiver of a couple of them in the last week.
And I'm in a very privileged position in my professional career to be able to give compliments for all sorts of important situations where there's been difficulty where people have given stuff a go. I gave the compliments to the incredible staff at Woolworths in Lura the other day. They saved a man's life.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
You know, gentleman went into cardiac arrest at the counter.
CPR?
And they gave CPR. They shocked him.
Yeah.
And literally they saved his life. And I walked
you
into the
You almost fell on him, didn't you?
I fell over. I tripped on my feet.
Oh, dear.
And fell flat on my face right in front of him, in front of the team that were working on him. Talk about it.
Yeah, and they had to divert time from him to you.
Talk about a strange distraction for everyone, like the, you know. But life can be odd like that. But anyway, we went back
like
later.
Almost second degree manslaughter, if you ask me. Was
I'm just so grateful I didn't land on him.
Because
if he was waking up just as I arrived after the shock. Imagine if I'd sort of splattered him onto the ground.
I've seen that on YouTube somewhere.
And then they were like, "Oh, he was alive." I was like, "No, he wasn't." And
that must have been so exciting for the people.
Oh, it was. Look, they were pretty stunned by it, and because it is a very, it's a very powerful thing to have to go through.
Yeah.
But we went back. And I wanted to say thank you to their team and to just let them know that, irrespective of the outcome, they did an amazing job.
Yeah.
And to let them know they did an amazing job. And you could see them lifted the team up.
Did you hear what you said? Sorry, I'm just going to interrupt. You said irrespective of the outcome. So just comments like that, it almost prepares them for the next time if the outcome isn't the same.
Yeah, that's right.
When you have the skill to be able to say something like that.
Yeah. No, because it won't always be a positive outcome. But
No, I've had three negative outcomes.
Yeah, but nonetheless, you know, people getting in there and giving someone else a hand, giving it a go.
Yeah.
You know, bystanders who stop at accidents, who give it a go. Mm. People who are there, who help give a hand over or help out in some capacity. I think it's important for me, in my role anyway, to acknowledge that, to say thank you, because it's for any difficulty that's been generated as having experienced that particular scene, whether there be a bystander or a family member, and it will generate a lot of a sense of ill at ease. People will become ill at ease with it.
I love
as
that.
As they become, you know, as they sort of try to come to terms with what they've seen, I think it's positive to have somebody in a more experienced role like myself come in and say,
Very true.
No, you know, on, well man. Done. Good. Great. Good on you for giving us a hand and giving it a go.
So the Australian experience, I really, CPR, and I was shocked that I thought everybody knew CPR, and it's still, you know, it's not a majority of people.
No, I don't think so, but it's, look, if somebody collapses in front of you, and the main thing is, one, to recognise it, that's the first part.
Yeah.
Number two is to call 000 early. Yeah, yeah. They will give you instructions over the phone, and we're very good at doing that now and receiving instructions.
So one in four do have CPR training.
Yeah, well, so, is it? Is it one in four in Australia?
Is that all it is?
Yeah.
Bugger all. Well, it's the good thing about, like, falling, you know, in a supermarket is...
Mm.
You know, there's far more than four people there.
Oh, so God. And there was an off-duty, we think she was a lifeguard.
Right,
who was in the queue standing behind him, who just got straight onto his chest and started giving him CPR. Now, here's another important thing. First of all, having a go. And it doesn't involve artificial ventilation anymore. It just involves chest compressions.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's can get be the blood CPR, circulate. Right?
So, yeah.
The other thing, too, is that it happens to men and women.
Hmm.
So to expose a man's chest and to put a defibrillator on it is a little, in many ways, easier than exposing a woman's chest in a public space and putting a defibrillator on her.
Mm.
And people need to understand that where somebody is in cardiac arrest and you're having to do CPR and you've got access to a defibrillator, whether they be male or female, you open up the shirt, and that means we use scissors. We scissor up the shirt.
Yeah.
You scissor through the bra, or the bra gets lifted if it's a woman.
Mm.
The pads go on, so there's a pad that goes just under the right shoulder.
The pads is what you're saying.
The pads have to be on the skin. So there's a pad that goes just under the right shoulder, and then there's a pad that goes under and sideways to the left breast.
Right.
Yeah. So on the side of the chest, under the left breast.
On the rib cage.
On the rib cage.
Yeah.
Right? So, and there's when you have a look at the pads as you pull them out of the defibrillator, you'll see there's a diagram.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, then the machine goes on. Now, the statistics show that women, on the whole, don't receive early defibrillation by comparison to men in a public space because people are concerned about the modesty of the patient. But in a life-threatening situation like this, modesty goes out the window.
See, I wouldn't give it a thought personally.
Yeah, yeah. So modesty has to go out of the window.
Yeah, good.
And then you've basically got to expose the patient's chest, male or female, put the pads on, turn the machine on, and then there's a pause as you get the machine to analyse, and the machine will tell you what to do. If it says it's... Now, not everyone in cardiac arrest gets a shock.
No.
Okay? If they're asystole, that means they're flatlining on the machine, they're not getting a shock. There's only two rhythms that are shockable, ventricular fibrillation and pulseless VT, pulseless ventricular tachycardia.
Right.
They're the only circumstances that get a shock. Now, that is what happens in the early stages of a cardiac arrest. The machine does the interpretation of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if the machine won't shock, it's not going to shock, in which case you're going to be back onto the lower half of the chest and you're going to be doing good, deep chest compressions. Don't worry about the cracking of the ribs, the cracking of the sternum.
Yeah.
If you're doing that means you're doing a reasonable job and you're getting to the right depth.
Right, wow.
And it's about getting the right speed. And we know that the speed that we go at is if you sing to yourself, Staying Alive.
Yeah, well,
by the Bee Gees.
Wow. Well, just you one know, that gives you the right two rhythm. Mississippi, you know, three Mississippi.
No.
I do that.
I go row, row, row your boat.
Staying alive, staying alive.
Yeah. So it's I go row, row, row your boat. So row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Now, if you go through that twice, that gives you 30 compressions.
Perfect. Right.
And then we ventilate. You don't need the public to do that, but that gives us.
Okay.
So, so it's actually quite deep. It's a third the depth of the chest. It's quite firm.
Wow.
It's just above, it's on the lower half of the sternum.
Yeah.
It's two hands locked together right over the top. You're kneeling on the floor and you're using your body weight to compress down and to go through at that rhythm.
Awesome explanation. If people want to text in, and you'll send them a certificate because they just passed the CPR course.
And you don't need a current first aid certificate to do CPR, right? If you've never done a formal first aid course,
you still can
do it.
But there's also an important thing that we were talking about last week. There's a you can get in touch or get a defib in your street, defibrillator.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's a person. Remember, like Neighbourhood Watch, it's a similar thing. You used to have something on the letterbox and you knew that was a safe place.
Yeah. Out in Hartley, until it wasn't. Down in Hartley Vale and all sort of through Cox's River Road, there's properties there with public access defibrillation.
To defib-
I did a job a couple of months ago where a gentleman went into cardiac arrest and the neighbours went and grabbed it and went and applied it and did a great job.
I love them. Like the soccer organisations have them on the sideline.
Yes.
I think every sport, sporting, especially, you know, for.
Well, they've got them down at the beaches now as well.
Golden Oldies.
Now, look, also, listen, while I'm at it, I'm going to give a plug to the SAM app, which is the Samaritan, Good Samaritan app.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, it's just kicked off in Australia. It's an app that you have on your phone. So if you've done a first aid course and you've got some training, you might be a first responder. You might have done a first aid course for your
lifesaver.
work, for example.
We've got a 100,000 lifesavers in the country.
Brilliant, or, you know, you've done a workplace CPR course, that sort of thing. You have this app on your phone, and what it does is when we get a notification through Triple O that there has been a cardiac arrest, and in very specific circumstances, I'm talking about unexpected cardiac arrest. I'm not talking about a palliative care patient.
No, of course.
Then,
so like a community
Arrest, like somebody's collapsed on the street, that sort of thing. And people who are then tied into the app will get a notification on their phone, and it's only if it's within, I think, a 2 or 3 kilometre radius.
Wow.
So it's nearby.
That's awesome.
And then you have the option, to go and respond or not. And basically, and we're starting to see this now where we've got people who get the notification, they drive to the scene or they run out of the house and there's somebody on the street who's collapsed on the street in front of them, and then they start CPR. And then that gives that person an opportunity. It opens up the window
for
us then to come in with advanced life support and to actually do some further work with that person. So that's what, and that will improve survivability. Okay.
I think it's a great opportunity to segue here as well, because prevention is also a great thing, like Kiora honey that's come on board with the Men's Mental Health Show.
That delicious Manuka honey.
It's wonderful. I know it's not cheap, but we've got a wonderful sponsor there. And I just thought I'll segue into that quickly. B2body.com.au. That's B2body.com.au. And many benefits and things behind Manuka honey. Anyway, back to
couldn't agree more.
So and then it's basically you'll get a notification. So have a look at the SAM app, S-A-M.
Yeah.
And then if you're at all remotely skilled in the, you need to actually have a first aid ticket to get it done.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is about just getting in there and giving it a go. That opens up a window of survivability for that person then.
Yeah. Such a good idea, like a fabulous idea. And I probably, you know, like you said, you know, defib in community areas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Part of, I think, improving support, you know, from a mental health support and prevention base is moving upstream and getting into the community.
Mm.
So things like men who have, who are grieving or, you know, going through these things, the idea of creating safe spaces like you guys did last week in the community. And my view is the community care and peer mentoring model, right? Where we build these little hubs, right? So of men who can sign up or, you know, be supported.
Yeah.
I love the idea of like, oh, I've got a first aid kit, or I am a peer support community care trained champion, or, you know, I'm a counsellor, or I'm a peer support person, or, you know, I've got certain, you know, suicide prevention training or whatever.
Yeah.
Putting that on, and like, oh, I'm pressing a button. So rather, Lifeline has its role and I do warm line stuff and have call people back. Pressing a button and having a bloke who is 500 metres away.
Yeah, that's right, who can drive.
Right, and he says, I'll be sitting in my front. Yeah, just walk past.
Come over and have a chat.
All I want to do, I'm sitting here, a cup of tea on the veranda and, just let me know. Just have a chat.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
That's something to look
Wouldn't
at,
that be
eh?
Cool?
That's something great to do in my, even just, well, you know, the saying, you start in your own backyard first, you know?
Well, there's the world. Roses in the Ocean have got touch point courses coming up in this area.
We're doing one together, you and I, aren't we? We've got the 3rd of Feb or something, is it?
Yeah. And the idea, that people can do that kind of care companion, peer support kind of suicide awareness and mental health awareness courses, right? You know, mental health first aid, the assist course through Lifeline, you know, Safe Talk. You don't need to have a white coat to have a conversation that cares.
No, that's true. No. Very much
and
so.
Supports.
Yeah.
And it's like when you went back to Woolies and those people lifted up.
Yeah.
Right? You were giving them that kind of peer support and that conversation. They didn't need, you know, to sign up for three sessions with a counsellor.
No.
It takes 6 months and, you know, they have to freak out waiting for it.
Yeah.
What they needed was someone they respected, they trusted, who told them they'd done a good job. And in that, their inner protectors come together and they, you know, the fear is eased, the anxiety is let go of, and the love's shared, and they're okay because humans are really resilient when we get some good stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and we get some good help and some good, you know, good understanding and some good love.
Yeah. Yeah. We're recognised.
Well, spot on, man.
And, you know, we can have a heart to heart. Have a meaningful, you know.
Yeah.
You just need to be a safe person.
You give me a great idea to put something on Lawson Locals instead of taking the entertainment out of it, what I do normally 11 o'clock at night on Facebook.
Yeah.
I love the comments of what goes on with the people I live amongst.
Yeah.
But there's something that's reinforcing,
the problem
positive.
Absolutely. The problem with the trolling that people do, right? And I, you know, every now and then I dive in knowing that I'm going to get, as I pop up, I'm going to get hit with the mud pies. But you know, it's good practice.
It's a great
right to let go of things.
Yeah.
And but the important thing is, sure, everybody's got their ideas and opinions. The thing we need to understand is perspective is not truth. Right, the truth of something is in the middle of everybody around its opinions and perspectives.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I have a perspective and most you have a perspective.
Yeah.
Right. The truth may be, I don't know, unrecognizable in the middle somewhere. Right.
Mm.
But me regarding you as something negative or conflictual or whatever, simply because your perspective is different to mine, is really damaging me.
Because
I need to resolve and accept the fact that in that thing we might have a different perspective.
Yeah.
But if I'm ill and you're about to perform CPR on me.
Yeah.
Right. You need to be available to me to connect and care. And if I've shut you down or ostracized or exiled you from my life simply because your perspective is different to mine, and I'm actually causing myself potential injury.
You're going to get help anyway. It doesn't matter.
Oh, I know. You are good. But imagine that person down, you know, next door who you're in the middle of a conflict with.
Yeah.
You're not even going to call them if you need help.
Mm. Some people feed on that conflict though, don't they? They just love it. They just...
That's because it's their inner...
They derive satisfaction from just sort of...
Yeah.
Poking the bear and inflaming situations, and they derive a lot of derive a lot of satisfaction out of it.
Everything we do has a purpose.
Yeah.
So what is that? The question I have to, you know, because I am a I'm a fish shaker, right?
A fist shaker.
A fist shaker. Sorry, that was not badly pronounced.
Yeah.
So I want to put up all the rat bags up against the wall.
And,
you know, when the revolution comes, right? My great challenge is to accept people. That's why I was saying a bit earlier. The whole concept of, first of all, you know, we are born and go into, you know, our adolescence with a sense of how important we are.
Yeah.
And then with a little bit of experience under our belt and some learning and some, you know, hopefully that knowledge turns into some wisdom and some through our experiences and our propensity and our potential growth, we start to see the value of others.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
When we go beyond the fact and realise that nothing around that is important, that everything is valuable, everything is connected. It's not different, right? We're not differentiating someone. When we start to realise that they are just a rearranged version of ourselves with the same stuff that grows us, we can let...
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, when we can let go of the need for them to be the same as us.
Right. Yeah, right? Okay. Yeah.
And then we let go of the need to you know, potentially sort of
concede that their differences are nice too. Right. When we see no variation, but we see to the core of our commonality, right? Sure. The same molecules, the same energy, the same emotional truth.
Yeah.
When we find that, look at the truth in the middle, that's the next level.
Yeah.
So how do you get to that? I have no idea.
Nah.
Mm. Yeah. The Dalai Lama probably would know.
Yeah.
Probably other gurus out there would know. There are certainly some guys I listen to that I think they're further along the journey than me.
Well, we all end up at the same spot, don't we?
And that's it. The dust we begin as.
Yeah, a dust we end.
And dust we end up as.
Yeah, so in the end, we're all drawn together in the same way. You could use that as your yardstick.
Yeah. Yes.
We're all really on the same journey.
Yes.
Absolutely. The same.
We're wandering in different directions, but the destination is always
the same. But be more positive about it instead of saying things like you're entitled to your opinion no matter how wrong you are or something. That's what I often say.
Well, I remember, and like this is a little, you know, off the track, but at my wife's eulogy, and I'd caught hold of, and I'm not sure if I've shared this before or not, but I caught hold of the concept from a guy, you know, biocentricity, right? The sense that we are. That the stuff of the universe, right, the stuff of everything, everyday stuff, is actually the stuff of everyone.
Right.
So everyone who has ever lived, there is some atom in me
for
everyone that ever lived. And I just went, oh, my goodness, right, this concept of saying when I look at everything around, when I look at my family and, you know, when I feel my wife is actually present in the atoms around me.
Yes.
Right, so the people in my life, my family and my friends and so on, are actually carrying a piece of the thing I most loved in the world.
Wow. Mm, mm-hmm.
And what is then, what am I doing not honouring that atom of her in them, right? Yeah, yeah. How can I not love them and then, kind of, you know, when I felt, you know, completely connected and loving of my wife.
Mm, that's a lovely way to think about things.
Pretty, yeah. And that's just probably...
It's like the holotropic universe theory of things like where the sum of things is represented in just in part. So you can take a small part of a hologram and break it. You can take a hologram, break it up into little pieces, and the whole is, even though you've only got a small part of that hologram, like as an image.
Everything is in it.
Everything is in it. Is contained within it.
That's so cool. Richard Swartz, the guy who developed the internal family systems model of counselling, of psychotherapy,
right?
Which I think is a really powerful model, right? He talks about how we are made up of parts, right? So our core self exists regardless of anything that happens to us, right? So when you can go down to your core self, but a lot of parts are created. So it's almost like we divide labor because it's a big thing living. And our brain says the best way we do this is we have a part who runs, who looks after this emotion, looks after that capability, looks after this strength, looks after this vulnerability. Right. But each of those parts have parts.
True.
Right. And then... You know the fractal designs, yes, right? Like the chaos theory.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a fractal design, right?
Yeah,
so our personality, but it's not. Humans are good at pulling all that together. And when I first encountered this thought, I said, because I know like humans are a paradox, right? We want to contribute, but we also want to lead, right? We want to be following and leading, right?
Yeah.
We want to be contributors, and yet we want to be benefiters,
pillars,
right? Yeah, we want to be on our adventures. But we need to have security, right? You need to be home and away, right, at the same time. Everything, so much of us is explained by those dichotomies.
Yes.
Right? And I went, how does that even work? Right? Because, like, it's not the same in other kingdoms, right? Animals will hunt. Why? Because they're hungry.
Mm.
Not because they have an existential crisis, right?
Yeah.
So humans have the capacity to break down into these constant repeatable models of managing the world. The problem is we get messed up, so certain big traumas occur when we're young, or later on as we experience life we have loss and pain and suffering. Those things create you know, interrupts in those patterns.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So putting them together by hugging, you know, bringing them back in together, accepting and acknowledging that they don't have to be different. They're not broken. Men are not broken.
They just
have something, you know, the pattern's a little bit interrupted.
Yeah. Yeah.
What can we do to pull that pattern together, to work together and go back? We could roll up to the
just
next level.
Just a separated and glue again.
Yeah, this has gone completely out in the air. Sorry, mate.
No. That's the thing, isn't it, that if we break these systems of behaviours down, they can seem inordinately complex, chaotic, difficult, when in fact it's also very, 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 very simple.
Very simple. Mm.
It's very simple. Mm. So I think I recall a story where an anthropologist was interviewing one of the Kalahari Bushmen in Africa.
Wow.
Who are notoriously incredible hunters and have the capacity for tracking their prey, animals, over the course of days, if not over the course of a week. They're incredibly resilient and the absolute masters of being able to track down and hunt a prey animal to feed their family and themselves. And this anthropologist, who knew a lot about their culture and about their capacity for being able to do this, interviewed one of the bushmen and said, of all the skills that you have as a hunter, you know, your observation, your knowledge of the animals, your knowledge of footprints, of habitat, the weapons that you use, your fitness, you know, finding water sources, migratory patterns, of all those things, what makes, you know, the Kalahari Bushman the most successful? What do you need? What do you need to be the best? What is it that makes you so good at what you do? And the Bushman, without hesitation, said, it's hunger.
I love
didn't
that.
You, didn't right. you see this guy? It's a typical Moose story.
Yeah. So you know, so this is there's very simple answers to these rather complex
wet
questions.
Both sides of the breadboard, remember?
It sounds
like this has really rubbed off your old man on you. You know, when you shared that. Hey, look, we'll look at wrapping up. I think we'll call this. You like the C's? You're working on about 9 of them. We're going to call this the 3 G's, not 5 G. It's safe.
Yeah.
The 3 G's, the grace, gratitude and great minds. Thanks, boys.
Thank you.
You know, often I got asked a couple of times, I think, over the last week or so, you know, when people were in acknowledgement of the wonderful guests that came on last week to pay their respects. Where do you find these people? If I knew that answer, I probably wouldn't share it with you anyway. you know, when somebody gives me a compliment, I often turn back and say, well, it really isn't that difficult when you just surround yourself with people that are smarter than you or more creative or greater minds. And, you know, having you two blokes here today, thank you.
Well, like attracts like, Brad.
Spillo,
yeah.
You're a lodestone.
You're a lodestone. You are. Like attracts like, mate.
Yeah. Just need to be a bit more porous in my stone, don't
mate,
I?
Mate, every so stone. You love the stone that's here, right? And that's, you know, and, you know, the concept. I dedicate that, you know, me diverting into fractal theory, right, to Bodhi, who would be furiously writing in his notebook I have got to sort out John by next week.
I think Bodhi's more of a realist. He would have given himself till the end of 24 to get
work on it. He says, this is a big job. We'll eat that spoonful.
This is not going to happen in one session. I think that goes for all of us. Big thanks to all manufacturing personnel, recruitment, labour, high in the manufacturing industry. And, of course, Kai Ora Honey, K-A-I-O-R-A. And you can check out Kai Ora Honey on BEE2Body.com.au, B2Body.com.au. Big thanks to Mounties. Big thanks to RBM.
Thanks, RBM.
Just wonderful sponsors. And, I've got my daughter up here now, so I probably won't be able to join you down at Mountain High Pies for a pie after this.
I understand
this.
That.
We probably should be ringing the bell when I'm mentioning this.
Yeah.
I'm picking up a few lawsy tricks here.
You know
what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, am I going to salivate? This is like a sort of a Pavlov dog's sort of response, is it?
I knew you'd give it to me. See you next week. We've got, I can't remember, I'll put something up next week. The following week, I've got Penny Holbrook coming on. Penny's got a lovely young man, which I put up his bio and everything on the Men's Mental Health Show page. I very rarely put anything up on my my personal page. But so yeah, join the Facebook Men's Mental Health page. You know, follow us. Pass on these podcasts. They can be found pretty much on most podcast platforms. I'm sure there's someone in your street. And maybe, you know, ask yourself what I can do within the community to help with a defib.
That's right.
Be the mental health person.
It's a powerful tool.
How we go about that. I think this is a wonderful stepping stone of something we can create ourselves.
If someone leaves a message, I'm happy to point them to courses or
so stuff. John, how do people get in touch with you, John?
Mate, I've got a email, John at jmcoaching.com.au and grab me on Facebook, JM Coaching, or 0422672049.
And as always, I can be reached on Triple I. In the meantime, do a first aid course.
Yeah,
and have a look at if you've got some first aid skills at the SAM. SAM app.
I love that. That's exciting.
Yeah, I like that, man. And thank you both again for the wonderful content and the flow. Yeah, really, it's wonderful. Looking forward to doing many more shows this year, boys.
Thanks for having me.
It's
a
massive hole we've got to fill, so any support and love you can give,
good on you,
I'm much appreciative. So thank you. There you go.
Cheers, Billow.
See you next Tuesday, 11 a.m, same time, 89.1 RBM FM, here on the Men's Mental Health Show.
See you, listeners.
Bye-bye.
Bye.